Looking into the crystal ball, what are the trends of 2018 here in Maine and beyond? It's one thing to look back and talk about the trends that emerged or picked up steam last year. Think the Me Too movement or the craft brewing industry in Maine. But what about the year ahead? What do you find yourself becoming passionate about? What do you find yourself planning to try this year? A new cause? A boutique exercise class? A new app on your phone? Or a pom-pom hat? Whatever it is, chances are there are others who share your new interests, and together you will all help define the new year. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will talk with those who think hard about things like this, journalists who have their antenna up for the slightest inkling of all new trends. 2018, here we come, next. But first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Happy New Year, and thanks for joining us. What's in store for 2018? Well, today we're going to talk about what may be trending in the year ahead, and maybe we'll talk about what trends from last year are on their way out. Joining me in the studio today, Shannon Bryan, who is founder of FitMaine.com. Before launching FitMaine.com a couple years ago, she was editor of MaineToday.com. Brian Kevin is managing editor of Down East Magazine, and online with us from the Washington Post, Jessica Contrera. She's a reporter for the paper and author of the Post's annual What's In and What's Out column. As always, we want to hear from you. Have you spotted any trends yet in the new year? What are you looking forward to in 2018? What do you hope will be a trend in 2018? Join our conversation. Our phone number 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Welcome to all of you on this very cold second day of the new year. And I'm going to start with you, Jessica. You know, it's one thing to chat with friends at a dinner party about what you might think might be in and out in the coming year. But you and your colleague take it one step further and put your list in print for all to see. Does it take courage to come up with the list, and how do you do it?
Yeah, it's always a really fun thing to do, a creative exercise at the end of the year. This is something the Washington Post has been doing for 40 years now. Every year on January 1st, the list comes out in print. And so what we do, my colleague Everdeen Mason and I kind of go around the newsroom and we talk to all the smart people who cover the White House and sports and pop culture. And we ask them sort of what is going to be coming in the new year. What will be the things that come July or November we will all be talking about in 2018.
And what's the record of this? Do you have some famous hits or misses in the past?
Oh, yes. I love looking back at the old lists. One of my favorites is that one of our columnists here, Hank Stuver, was doing the list in 2005, and he called that a man named Barack Obama would be in soon.
Ah, interesting. So what's your biggest prediction for the new year? Your list doesn't really rank them. So which do you think is the biggest?
Yeah, we have all different kinds of things. One of my favorites is one of the last items on the list, that women are slightly in 2018. We're going to be seeing that all across the board, all different kinds of industries. Many people have predicted that it's going to be a good year for women, and we're hopeful and feel the same.
All right. Well, Brian and Shannon, I want to bring you back into the conversation. You're both Maine focused. Brian, what trends do you see emerging or expanding here in the Pine Tree State?
Supermoons. I think we're going to see a lot more of these things in 2018, maybe 3-4 a month. I was trying to keep this list on the way down here and looking at the list that Jessica and Everdeen put together and thinking about all the different maneuvers in food and sort of entertainment. And I think probably one of the biggest things, though, that I thought was worth bringing up was the continued sort of exodus of folks from Portland who are priced out of the housing market here and end up, you know, resettling increasingly far afield, it seems to me, which sort of provides like an injection of younger people and new ideas and creative talent, maybe entrepreneurial capital, to places like the Midcoast and inland York County. And I think housing in Portland isn't getting any cheaper, and you're just going to find more and more people over the course of the next year that are looking elsewhere in Maine and going, let's set up shop in Rockland, let's do it in Limerick, that kind of thing.
All right, Shannon, what about you?
Well, that, to just speak to Brian's point, that's like a really cool thing that actually is one of our frustrations now, but actually could be such a boon to other communities,
oh,
like
for
you
sure.
said, which is cool. Well, of course, my eye is always kind of on the physical activity stuff, so that's where I tend to pay attention, and I like that it seems like we're in a trend that's like longer than just like the last year, where lots more physical activity is becoming more accessible, right? 10 years ago, I didn't know anyone who did 10Ks or anyone who did yoga, but now we've got people who are participating in these activities because these activities have been made more fun with the addition of brewery and yoga combined together, or yoga and paddleboarding, or yoga and kittens, right? So we've sent this message that
we've done yoga and goats on this program.
Right?
We've talked about that, yeah.
Goats are a trend. I'll throw that out there. Goats plus anything is good these days. But I think, physical fitness or physical activity used to be something that we strictly thought of as exercise and something that was like inherently unpleasant, but we did because we had to, that we sort of, we needed to like get in shape or lose weight, or we were too sedentary in our jobs. Now there's this thing that we have to sort of trudge through. But I think there's this larger trend, and we're kind of seeing it peaking right now too, where we're participating in physical activity and activities that are inherently fun, where like the fun is like the prevailing concept rather than burning calories necessarily. Not that we aren't still exercising to burn calories or to have a certain physique, but I think a lot more of what I'm seeing day to day, seeing people post on social media about activities they're excited about, it's stuff that's physical activity or outdoor adventure or new fitness class that's exciting and fun and is more of a life experience rather than something you're doing to attain a certain body type.
So this is related a little thing on your list, Jessica, a little bit of prediction that boutique fitness may be out and stress eating may be in. You are not the only person I've heard say this might be the case.
Yeah, that was a little bit of a joke, just because we have here in D.C., there it seems every year there's some new boutique fitness that's going to be all the rage. They just pile up. And this year we looked for some new one. Last year, it was Orange Theory. And this year it seemed like we just couldn't find there wasn't something new coming. And we said, oh, for once, we're not getting a new boutique fitness craze. but what I think, what you guys were speaking to that really rings true for me is this sort of experiential thing. A lot of people are looking to as an answer to many different problems. I just did a story actually at a mall in western Pennsylvania that is one of America's many sort of quote-unquote dying malls. And the solution that many people are bringing to that problem is, okay, you have to make the mall an experience. It can't just be shopping. You have to give people a place that they can work out, a place that they can have this sort of meaningful interaction that they will then post on Instagram, and that is the future. So I think across the board, you're going to be seeing lots of the things, whether it's through exercise or in another kind of thing to do, quote unquote, that it has to do with an experience more than something that you purchase or something that you just do and go home.
All right. Well, Brian and Shannon, anything over?
I could try my hand at like an out and an in the Washington Post. I'm gonna say out is barrel-aged beers. Maine has this like very robust beer culture in recent years, and it sort of leads the nation in a lot of ways. Barrel-aged beers are out. In barrel-aged toothpaste, barrel-aged Worcestershire sauce, barrel-aged you name it, because we have also this proliferation of craft distillers, which is like very right. on trend nationally, but it's been a really big deal in the last year and a half in Maine. These guys are churning out barrels all over the place. There's all these barrels. They're done with them. Somebody's got to find something to do with them. We're going to find new and creative things to age in barrels. And I'm only a little bit kidding.
Is barrel the toothpaste
syrup
a real thing?
It's not, but I think after this show is over, barrel-aged syrup is a big thing in Maine right now. That's had a really big year, and it's really fantastic and delicious. And I genuinely think we're going to wake up in July this year and find something that's been aged in a barrel that you never saw coming.
Okay. Shannon, what do you say? Anything out?
I don't know. This is a prognostication, but maybe more of just a wish that I would like to see fewer home fries and more hash browns.
Yeah, you're here.
So, Jessica, I have to confess, I'm not hip enough to understand many of the things on your list. We did post it on our Facebook page, so anybody who wants to know what we're talking about, anybody who wants to scroll through it as they're listening to this program, go ahead. But one thing I do think that I got was that out anti-aging, in anti-anti-aging. And what I'm wondering is, do you think, are we talking about women who are letting their hair go gray, or are we talking about something bigger than that?
Oh, this was a really fascinating one to me as well. I have always seen the term anti-aging used on a lot of products, especially products that get rid of wrinkles. But there is this sort of trend in the beauty world that when you say anti-aging, it makes it sound like aging is a bad thing. And everyone's aging. And maybe that's a little discriminatory to people who are a little farther along in the aging process than the rest of us. So Allure, which is a big name in, as far as beauty goes and beauty reviews, Allure magazine is no longer going to use the term anti-aging because they don't want to make it seem like aging is a bad thing.
You know, I saw that in a great New Yorker article about where ageism is at in 2017 that must have run sometime in the last couple months. And I thought that was a really interesting point. We have a piece coming out in February, actually, for which I talked to Jessica Maurer, who is with the Maine Coalition of... I'm going to screw up the title. I'll see if I can't find it here before I finish this statement. But Maine Association of Area Agencies on Aging. But she made a really good point about how Maine is adapting to being the oldest state in the nation demographically and having a higher number of baby boomers than any other state in the nation. And how we might kind of be leading the charge in terms of changing our attitudes about ageism and looking at ways that our infrastructure can adapt to an aging populace that helps not just an aging populace, but kind of everybody. And the ways in which millennials are looking for a lot of the same things. Walkable communities is an example, and sustainable transportation, mass transportation solutions that folks who are getting on into retirement age, and I'm making finger quotes when I say that. So that anti-aging thing, I think, is actually really relevant in Maine.
Yeah, I'm hearing a lot more talk, as Brian said, about how we celebrate this aging community and also make sure that, you know, our workforce is filled in and all that stuff, and people with all this expertise and experience are employed in really great ways. But on the beauty aspect, as Jessica was saying, I know that I'm 39. I'm at that age where a lot of my peers are, you know, their hair is starting to go gray, the wrinkles are becoming more visible. You go to your 20th high school reunion and people look older suddenly, right? But we have a lot of these conversations, as I'm sure many women and men do, about, you know, the decision to dye. And I think my mother's era, you know, she was dyeing her hair when she was, like a late teen because her hair color didn't suit what she thought was beautiful. And now I'm talking to a lot more of my peers, and there's a lot more of an absolutely not, you know what I mean? Huh. Aging gracefully. And so I think as part of one of those larger trends, I really liked the anti-aging thing, only because, you know, you make these comments about like, oh, I found a wrinkle, or I got glasses, or my hair is going gray and stuff. And people are like, oh, my goodness, the world is going to collapse. And it's like, well, no, actually, I'd like us to have a conversation about I'm seeing these things, and I actually see them as a testament to the fact that, like, I'm alive and I'm continuing to age. And with that comes hopefully knowledge and experience and gives me a little bit of credibility in the work that I do and that kind of stuff. And I like hearing more of my peers talk about aging that way as more of a celebration. I don't know that anyone looks in the mirror and says, like, hallelujah, I've got more wrinkles. But I hope that we continue the anti-anti-aging thing. I really like that concept, and I hope we continue to talk about beauty and women and men as well in that vein.
I'd love to have you in the audience join the conversation. The phone number 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org. Throw us a tweet, send us a tweet, or post on our Facebook page. I'm sorry, I cut you off. Go ahead, Jessica.
Oh, yeah, I was just going to say that I think that there is also a number of shows and things in pop culture that are incorporating older women, not as token older women to appear in the show, but as older women who are living very full lives that have very little to do with the fact that they're older. Certainly the show Grace and Frankie was hugely popular in the last couple of years, and I think will continue to be because the women in the show are focused on living their romances and their families and not focused on, oh, no, I have another wrinkle.
And another one, which is cute the way you guys put it on the in and out list, Jessica, but is a real issue, especially here in Maine. You wrote out higher ed, in higher ed. And I'm going to explain the higher and the out is H-I-G-H-E-R and in higher ed, H-I-R-E. Are we talking about, the real focus and commitment on the trades?
Yeah, we've seen a lot, especially from the Trump administration, talking about jobs, jobs, jobs. That seems to be, the absolute bar for them of whether they are successful or not. So it was just kind of a fun way for us to talk about the focus on jobs. And on the higher ed, like higher education side, on the out, there are a lot of changes being made to some Obama-era protections for people going to college, for people who are in debt. And so it seems like the institution of higher education isn't being quite held in the esteem that it was in the previous administration.
Okay, and on a much lighter note, right before we go to break, Shannon, you noticed something in an email to me that I had just noticed as well, the pom-poms on beanie hats. I was traveling recently, lucky enough to travel in Europe, and I saw this, the beanie hats with the faux fur pom-poms, thought that was very European, and then as soon as I came back to the States, I saw them everywhere here too.
It's everywhere. I was actually making a decision to order some hats myself, and I was trying to decide, do I get, pom-pomless beanie hats or, hats with pom-poms and stuff. And somebody was like, well, I think women tend to wear pom-poms and men don't. And I was like, well, maybe I'll get one of
these. Oh, Tom Brady
does. And I took an informal poll at the pub at Sunday River while I was sitting there. And I looked around the room and it was like pom-pom, pom-pom, pom-pom. Men, women, all ages, all generations. The pom-pom is definitely a trend.
Brian, do you have a pom-pom hat?
I have a blaze orange hat that I bought for hunting season and decided it was so warm and comfy, I'm just keeping it all year long. So I'm
no
starting
pom-pom?
A trend or bringing one. No pom-pom, I'm afraid.
Okay, and what about you, Jessica?
I'm more of the headband winter person. Our winters
can be here. You're in Washington,
quite as vicious
D.C.
as yours there in Maine. So.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I'll tell you guys the phone number again before we go to a break. It's 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does MEMIC, a workers' compensation insurance company dedicated to safer workplaces, fair treatment for all workers, and a strong Maine economy. On the web at MEMIC.com.
On the next Fresh Air, Alzheimer's disease, what we know about how the disease attacks the brain and destroys memory, and what researchers are investigating that might delay its onset and reduce the damage it causes. My guest will be British neuroscientist and researcher Joseph Gibelli, author of the new book In Pursuit of Memory, The Fight Against Alzheimer's. Join us.
Tonight at 7 o'clock, here on Maine Public Radio. Our Maine Public Holiday Classical Stream is still there and doing its thing and will continue until mid-January, providing a quality, commercial-free, public radio-style 24/7 holiday online stream of the many wonderful sounds and diverse interpretations that make up the holiday repertoire. The Maine Public Holiday Classical Service is available on the Maine Public app or online at our website, mainepublic.org. Just click on radio or listen live. And enjoy whenever and wherever.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, what may be trending in the new year. With me in the studio, Shannon Bryan, who is founder of FitMaine.com. Before launching FitMaine.com a couple years ago, she was editor of MaineToday.com. Brian Kevin is managing editor of Down East Magazine. And on the line with us, Jessica Contreras. She's a reporter for The Washington Post and one of the co-authors of the Post's annual In and Out list. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email, please, to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Continuing the conversation before the break, Shannon, we were talking about what's out, and you have an idea of what's out.
Yeah, it came to me after I made the potato reference. All potatoes are lovely, by the way. But I've been seeing a lot more people really interested in seltzer. Like, seltzer seems to be a big thing because I think soda might be one of the things that's going out. I see a lot of people transitioning, using seltzer as their, like, transition drink, trying to wean themselves off of soda. And I wonder if maybe soda has seen its day.
You know, anecdotally, the company came and removed the soda machine from the Down East office about a month and a half ago because not enough people were pumping quarters into the thing, or dollars, or however much a soda costs. I don't know. I don't drink it. I'm with the trend.
There you go.
We'll go to Pat, who's calling from Otisfield. Hi, Pat. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. I just wanted to tell a little anecdote. I taught adult education for many years, and I was born during when Truman was president. And one of my younger students one day said to me, oh, my God, you've lived through so much history. I didn't know how to really take it at the time, but I figured, well, yeah, I know a lot of stuff and remember a lot of stuff. And actually, speaking about soda, growing up in the 50s, you know, in elementary school, at my house, we only had soda on for birthday parties.
So what's was old is new. Was it Moxie?
Maybe we're going back to that. I don't know.
All right.
Guys, I visited Maine earlier this year and tried Moxie for the very first time. It was wonderful.
Didn't
you
make
liked
the list,
it?
Though, did it?
I think it's still in my stomach somewhere, I think. You know, it's just like a nice sugar lining.
Pat, thanks for calling. We'll go to Sue, who's calling from Limerick. Hi, Sue. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you today?
Good.
I'm calling because I've been listening to your anti-aging conversation and people in the workforce, the millennials, baby boomers. And I think a big problem that is not really recognized is the fact that you have a large population of older workers that are being laid off and fired simply because of their age, regardless of what any employer wants to tell you. And we're losing a huge wealth of information and knowledge base because of this. And there's a lot of hoopla about millennials and getting people to stay in Maine. And I think the same amount of hoopla needs to be placed on keeping the older employees who still have many years left in the workforce employed.
Sue, thanks for your call. Brian, go ahead.
You know, I don't want to turn this into a buzz marketing session for a forthcoming February issue of Down East, but I will. But this is something that we talked about in preparation for this story. I mean, it's a really good point. And to the idea of trends in 2018, some of the folks that I talked to for that story, they had just come off of a conference at the tail end of this year. I think it was in October, the theme of which was reframing aging. And part of the ideal was getting more folks in Maine who are maybe of retirement age back into the workforce in some capacity, and how the workforce and our notion of work might have to change to accommodate that. But I think there are a lot of people in positions to make those decisions in Maine who attended that conference, not 2 months ago, and might be heading into 2018 with a head of steam.
Sue, thanks for your call. I want to ask you, Jessica, about something on your list, and this is something I want. I know that the view from inside the Washington Post is unique on this one. Out, you put Biden 2020, in Michelle 2028. Especially interesting because Joe Biden is coming to Maine this month, as he is a bunch of places on his book tour. I think a lot of people speculating, but you've got that already in the rearview mirror.
Well, you know, it doesn't mean that he won't run, to say, but Biden was sort of a representative of for many people, this sort of lovable character who they had a lot of hopes for. And, you know, Michelle has sort of disappeared off of our radars, but certainly as a certain set of people have a nostalgia for the Obama presidency, I think that people might be floating her name more and more in coming years as somebody who they have that sort of warm, fuzzy feeling about.
Aha. Let's talk about politics here in Maine. Something I can predict for this year is a very interesting gubernatorial campaign with 20 candidates. Do we see a different tenor of campaign than we have in years since? Brian, what do you think?
I don't know. That's something I was thinking about on the way down here when I was trying to make this list. If I were a betting man, I'm going to say no, and I feel a little lousy saying that. I feel like we had a shot at a candidate who might have been kind of a real consensus builder, and she has passed on it, And when I look at this field of 20, I'm not sure that I see a lot of names that leap out at me as folks who are going to bring together people who deviate real far from the center on either side. Maybe those two sides just can no longer be brought together. But I'm not optimistic about it.
Yeah, I think, unfortunately, I think one of the things that we are carrying forward from 2017 into 2018 is maybe a lack of optimism when it comes to politics. And the, you know, I think we want to be, you know, hopeful, and we want to say, like, we want to see these standout characters. I love that one of the things on the Washington Post list is the, you know, women going from marching to running for office. And so I hope we continue to see more of that. I know, you know, there's a focus on getting more women to run. There's lots of local organizations and national ones encouraging women to do so. But I think when we have 20 people, you know, it looks like, you know, the Republican presidential race, where you've got a stage full of people, you can't really hear one over the other at some point. And you just feel sort of lost in the abyss, I guess.
We'll go to Ader calling from Westbrook. Hi, Ader, go ahead.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
So this really doesn't have anything to do with the political aspect of what you guys are just talking about. And first and foremost, I just want to say that I love listening to this radio station every morning and on my commute to work. So I appreciate you guys doing what you guys do. But I actually wanted to talk about a topic that was actually brought up a while ago, which is home fries.
Let's get serious, you guys.
So to keep it on a serious note, moving on to 2018, someone brought up home fries, and it's funny because a couple of days ago, you know, I had this big notion of, you know, home fries are not that exciting, they didn't taste that great or anything like that, and yesterday morning, I was with my date, Samantha, at Brulee. I'm pretty sure I probably, like, butchered the name, or Brulee.
Oh, Brulee, yeah. Around,
but, correct. So I went there and I ordered my food, and it came with a set of home fries, and I'm like, oh my God, like, this is probably gonna be like any other home fries. And
so you're basically saying to Shannon, you don't want home fries to go out now that you've discovered these.
Oh, it is so, and it is so. The moment I smelled the spices, and I was like, okay, this is definitely what it's all about. And like, I tasted it, and I was like, oh, Samantha, you gotta try this. Like, this thing is bomb. So it is definitely in, and you should definitely try it out. It's in Westbrook. It's definitely the new thing.
I will absolutely take that recommendation. Yeah. And to be clear, I like potatoes in all of their forms.
Yeah. Do you want to roll with another food trend if we're on the topic?
Yeah.
I think 2018 we're going to see the continued proliferation, or the enhanced proliferation, of oyster bars around the state of Maine. We've seen really good ones in the last year pop up around Damariscotta, additional one in Portland, maybe more. And I know 18 Central in Rockport is, I don't know if they're not quite 2 years in, they're doing gangbusters. But as aquaculture in Maine continues to roll on and gain steam, the landings in the last couple of years for oysters have been as high as they've ever been. There are folks that are looking for a market for all these wonderful oysters. And I think, I'll say this in like a trendy show kind of way, oysters are the new craft beer because they have all these regions. People are going to start appreciating different flavors as there are more and more folks growing oysters in the state. And I'm one of them who are looking for a market for these things. I think oysters are going to lose that like highbrow patina that they have, and in the same way the craft beer kind of has in Maine anyway, become much more of just an every person's snack, and people will have an oyster vocabulary that 5 years ago didn't think they would.
So Jessica, I understand in Washington the lobster roll trucks are doing very well, but other than that, what's some food trend from Washington D.C. that might make its way north?
Have you guys heard of ube?
I didn't even click the link on the story because I was so
intimidated.
Back
to the potatoes.
Yeah.
So ubes are purple yams. If you look up a picture of them, they look like sweet potatoes, but if you, instead of orange, they're purple. And I'm sure you guys have seen this up there, but colorful food is super popular everywhere because it's Instagrammable. So we have been told from my wonderful food team here at the Post that ube is going to be big in 2018.
Have you had them?
I haven't had it yet. Mm. I love sweet potatoes, but So I'm all like with you guys all for more potatoes. But the one food trend that we're getting a lot of feedback on that people just can't fathom, but it's happening in New York, it's happening in LA, and I'm sure it will be here in DC and around everywhere soon, is cheese tea.
Yes, I saw that on your list, and I could not help but be tripped up by it.
Cheese tea. I thought you were going to say insects.
So 2017.
I've heard of. cheese tea is this tea, you know, with this sort of whipped cheese topping on top of it. It is very colorful, also for the Instagrammy folks. But the teas, you know, they're usually like a matcha or a jasmine tea with, you know, sort of fruit infusions, kind of like bubble tea. And then it has this whipped cheese topping on it. And you know, it is very popular in Taiwan and China. That's kind of where the fad comes from. You know, we have seen in some Chinese tea shops, that you regularly get a line kind of 7,500 people out the door just to get this specific tea. So, yeah. And so if you are in New York or California, there's a chain called Happy Lemon. There's one called Little Fluffy Head. They're both getting very popular sort of in the way that maybe macarons did a few years ago, or bubble tea now you're seeing in malls and that kind of thing.
Have you tasted cheese tea, Jessica?
No, we don't have it here yet.
We don't have it here yet.
And I don't think it's something. I don't think it's something that I should try to make on my own. I'm not a great chef, and I like cheese and I like tea. I just don't know if I could master making them together.
I'm going to go to Jessica calling from Cape Elizabeth. Hi, Jessica.
Hi. I was calling. I think that preserving the monarchs by planting milkweed is going to keep growing and growing in popularity. And in Maine, we're kind of, you know, the monarchs that start out in Mexico, we're the fourth generation when they make it to Maine. And the other three generations only live a couple of weeks to a couple of months, but ours live 6 months and migrate back to Mexico from Maine. So what happened with me was I a couple of years ago, not even really thinking about the monarchs, but just I have a perennial garden and I don't spray or anything. So I have a lot of nectar plants. I bought some swamp milkweeds, which make a beautiful flower head. And this year I noticed all the caterpillars on it. And it's the only plant that the monarch will lay their eggs. So it was very exciting. And then we found some of the chrysalises nearby the caterpillars. And then when that hurricane, I think we were going to have Hurricane Jose maybe coming our way, the chrysalis was on one of my daylily plants, and it was, you know, the daylilies were at the end of the season. It kept going down and down. So I brought in the chrysalis, and then, you know, the monarch emerged, and it was a whole big deal. And then a second one happened, and I joined this, like, Facebook groups about monarchs and milkweeds, and these people are really fanatic.
You know, I think you're perceptive. I think you're onto something. Every time we do a gardening program on Maine Calling, we have people calling up saying, I want to attract more monarchs. What can I plant? And the answer, as you mentioned, is milkweed. So I think you're onto something. Thanks for calling. We're going to go to Kitty, who's calling from South Portland. Hi, Kitty. Go ahead.
Hi. I like to say I'm in my 85th year. And right after my birthday, I say that I'm in my next year. Because when you celebrate a birthday, it really is marking the end of the year. When you're 1 year old, you've lived a whole year. So I counteract ages in that way.
Well, Kitty, thanks. And a similar email from Lenny. I do not refer to my hair as gray, as it evokes the old gray mare. My hair is still valuable, and therefore I refer to it as silver, which it is. Very shiny
yes.
and pretty. So I think this program on trends for next year is taking on a bit of a trend itself.
Well, but I think also, and this maybe is a trend of itself, is the way we use language, too, like being much more aware of how powerful language can be, and sure, even how phrases on products like anti-aging send a larger, it seems like just a little, you know, descriptor, but how powerful phrases like that can send a message that are much more influential or pervasive and send, you know, say something else. So maybe it's a trend, too, in just how we think about how we talk about everything.
Maybe this is the year that we stop griping about this or that being politically correct and just start to consider being kind, considerate.
Yeah, not being jerks.
We're talking about trends for 2018. What do you think are going to be trends for 2018? What are you noticing a little bit here and there, seeing take off? With us today, the author of The List 2018 and at the Washington Post, Jessica Contrere. We also have Brian Kevin from Down East Magazine and Shannon Bryan from GoFitMaineFitMaine.com. And we'd love to hear from you, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Maine Audubon, a community of people who understand that when Maine's wildlife thrives, Maine thrives. Learn more at MaineAudubon.org. And Taggart Construction in Freeport, working to create healthy homes that respect the environment since 1994. TagCon.com.
Intelligence Squared US, where the world's leading thinkers debate today's most critical issues. The next topic up for debate, do liberals hold the moral high ground?
It matters not what we say. It matters what we do. And what conservatives are doing to this country now is an outrage.
If you think you're morally superior to a group of other people, it's a sign you're probably not.
That's all coming up on Intelligence Squared US.
Coming up shortly at 2 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio.
While the U.S. talks about regulating tech companies, the European Union takes action.
There's appetite for regulation and a trust in government to do it right.
Europe imposed restrictions against Uber, and a court there says people have a right to be forgotten on Google. I'm Kelly McEvers. Tighter restrictions on tech across the Atlantic this afternoon on All Things Considered.
From 4 to 6:30 each weekday evening here on Maine Public Radio.
And welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, what will be in and what's likely to be out in the year ahead. In the studio with me, Brian Kevin, the managing editor of Down East Magazine, Shannon Bryan, founder of FitMaine.com. On the line with us from the offices of the Washington Post, Jessica Contreras. She's a reporter for the paper and the author of the Post's annual In and Out list. Join our conversation. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. 1-800-399-3566. Jessica, I'm looking through your list, and I don't see death cleaning on it. Did that come up?
Yes. Actually, Swedish death cleaning is something that is definitely going to be in 2018. One of our wonderful writers, who was actually one of the first authors of the very first list in 1978, Eura Conscious, wrote about death cleaning this year. She found that all kinds of people are very into this idea, you know, along with the lines of minimalism and Marie Kondoing, getting rid of your items and doing it before you pass away, so that you're not leaving your family with loads and loads of stuff that they don't know what to do with.
And I should correct myself. It is on your list. The out is Swedish massage and the in is Swedish death cleaning. And Brian and Shannon, you've both noticed this trend as well.
Yeah, well, I was just home for the holidays in Illinois visiting family. And of course, my parents, I think you get to a certain point where your parents, just every time you're at their house, they have boxes and there's, you know, like, would you like these? You like these? And part of you says, yes, I would like that. And then, but mostly you're like, no, I don't want this stuff. And you feel maybe semi-obligated to take it because it makes them feel good. But I think, you know, I certainly have a condo full of stuff that I don't know how I acquired most of it. And the longer we live, the more we acquire. And I think thinking about where all this stuff's going to go, when we hold on to it, why are we holding on to it? Does holding on to it serve a benefit to, you know, our kids, like rifling through it? I think thinking about that while we're still alive and we can think about it is a really interesting concept that I think we don't do.
And I think this decluttering movement, if movement's not too strong a word, has been a trend for a couple few years now, and the Swedish death cleaning, which I knew nothing about until having read this, is, you know, a kind of a formalization of that in preparation for the end, I guess. But I do think maybe 2018 is when we start seeing, I've been waiting to see businesses popping up that cater specifically to this desire to get rid of stuff that you yourself cannot bring yourself to part with. And I would be willing to pay money. This is absurd, but it's kind of true, for somebody to just go through the 8,000 pictures of my toddlers right now and, you know, like narrow it down to a few really, really critical ones and do the hard work of pushing the delete button on the others that as a parent I just can't bring myself to do. So maybe these things do emerge as peculiar as they seem.
We have an email from Jeanette. How about a trend in fitness? Aerials, aerial dance, aerial yoga, aerial for kids, for older people, for relaxation, for group bonding, for a spectacular workout. Shannon Bryan rocks at aerials, just FYI. I teach at the Breakwater School as an apparatus dance theater. Plus, there's all sorts of places popping up teaching aerial yoga, circus aerials. Maine has a lot of cool aerials, and it's just going to grow this year.
That's actually so true. And Jeanette, who does teach this really great class, she teaches for kids, but it has adult classes as well at Breakwater. And I've been to those. And, you know, the circus school in Maine, you know, those professionals are professional, you know, circus artists, but they also teach classes to adults like us who are maybe not so flexible or strong, but we can still go do something that's physically very cool and interesting. And yes, is fitness and exercise, but doesn't feel like that. It just feels kind of awesome where you're hanging from a trapeze. But yeah, I'm seeing more of those apparatus for home as well, where people are using them for, you know, stretching in the same way we might do yoga at home. And you're looking to just stretch your muscles or, God, get a good back bend going, where they have devices now that like hook into your doorway and you can just hang that there and use that for stretching and stuff. So I think Jeanette speaks to a good point. Certainly there are classes you can go take, but even in the home, hanging from stuff just feels good.
I'll do
that seems
aerial
to make a lot
stretching.
Of sense for kids. It makes a lot of sense for kids, too, as parents are looking for non-contact sports as we become more and more aware of concussions and the sort of detriment of certain sports. I think there are is going to be a trend of parents looking for something their kids can do that is athletic but doesn't involve, potential injuries.
We'll go to Allison calling from Waldoboro. Hi, Allison. Go ahead.
Hi, I would like to see 2018's biggest food trend become the recognition of Maine cheese as an identity. People will ask for Vermont cheese and California cheese, but this should be the year of Maine cheese. There are so many people producing really high quality cheese within the state. It's available at farm stands and retail shops and restaurants, but we want people to start asking for Maine-made cheese in 2018.
We did a roundup back in the April issue, I want to say, where my colleague across the hall got charged with bringing in as much Maine cheese as she could find, and she attended some sort of event, some sort of farmer's market type event, I can't remember, and brought in, I don't know if it was a dozen and a half different Maine cheeses. And not only was that like ambrosial and phenomenal and we all gathered around the island and pigged out, but she definitely got the sense that Maine cheesemakers are a scene among themselves. There's a good relationship between the people in that world. And that makes a lot of sense to me.
Allison, thanks
and
for your
call.
And
were most of the cheesemakers women?
Oh, Allison, are most of the cheesemakers women or Brian?
In my recollection, they were. Allison, what's your experience?
Yeah, within Maine, most of the cheesemakers are women. There's a large majority of them that are also farmstead, so they're producing cheese from milk that they are making on their own farm. There are also some that are making really high quality cheeses from single source milk. I am a cheesemaker.
Gotcha. Alexander Jacobs at the New York Times had a great story back in November about feminist cheese, about how, in this age of sort of scary sexual harassment stories, one industry that is greatly dominated by women is the cheese industry. And there are some great quotes in there of women saying, well, look, cheese comes from women because cows need udders. So that's interesting to see. That's a trend in Maine as well.
Allison, thanks for your call. We'll move on to Rockport and Barry. Hi, Barry. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. I want to talk about artisan chocolate and want to point out that in Rockland, Kate McClear is the first chocolatier in the state to bring in single-source beans from Guatemala, Haiti, and the Dominican Republic to make wonderful single-source chocolate bars.
Yum.
Is she the Bixby bar?
This business
what's Kate's business?
Oh, another women-owned business. You know, I love Bixby bars, and I can't remember the woman's name who runs it. You're not thinking of Bixby bars. You're thinking of another chocolatier?
No, I'm thinking of Bixby bars.
Oh, it is her.
It is,
okay. Well, she's terrific,
Kate
and so are her chocolate
bars. She started making her own chocolate this summer.
Oh, cool. I stuffed my wife's stocking with Bixby bars and might have pilfered one like the night before.
That's one of those gifts you give somebody else and you kind of give yourself.
Barry, thanks for calling. We'll go to Marge calling from Gardner. Hi, Marge. Go ahead.
I've been reading. First of all, I'm really enjoying this show a lot. And it seems to me that more and more articles in the newspaper are about making a difference. And especially young people making a difference. The Kennebec Journal is carrying a number of articles about elementary school children, middle school children, and high schoolers doing some really amazing things. And I think that this is a trend that we're going to see increase. And I think it's wonderful. A lot of years ago, we saw kindness. People just doing things for strangers. And I think that, at least in the area that I live in, and as I've been out and around, it seems to me that people are going out of their way to be more kind and compassionate and to express gratitude.
I hope that's true. Man, that would make for a great 2018 if it were. There was an item on the Washington Post list. Jessica, you can refresh my memory because my laptop in front of me ran out of batteries here. I don't have the article open in front of me anymore, but it was less clapping back online and more something.
More apologies. Yeah.
Right, more apologies. And you know, I feel like as a devoted Twitter user, for example, I've seen in the last maybe 4 or 5 months an effort to say, hey, remember to use these social media channels to thank somebody who made something that you love, to credit, you know, give props to a writer who wrote something fantastic, to, you know, send love to a photographer who made something you enjoy. And if that's a trend, like taking social media and for that matter, like face-to-face, as the caller points out, just recognizing when people do good things for us in the world, like, that's better than cheese tea.
Well, I think also just, you know, inherently maybe as people, we're so much more inclined to speak up when we feel like we've been, you know, cheated or something. And I remember having a professor once in college who said, he was like, your generation, you know, doesn't, you know, speak up enough, whatever, like it's all complaints. And that's probably true of many generations. But I think Brian brings up a really good point that we do have these channels that allow us to connect with people so easily. And it is so enticing to reach out to somebody to like tell them, you know, give them a little what for when we feel like we should. But to be paying attention to our easy ability to reach out to people and give them, you know, a thank you.
Jessica, did apologies make the list because of wishful thinking or because of something you feel like you actually see more empathy developing in online settings? I assume you were thinking of online, but I guess I shouldn't take that for granted.
Yeah, I think we're just looking at a greater expectation that someone will apologize. I mean, certainly we've seen, you know, in all of the sexual harassment stories that came out last year, you know, there is no more no comment, right? If you don't make a what seems like a heartfelt apology, then that's really frowned upon, and even when those apologies came out, they were very much studied and talked about. You know, does this person really mean it? Is this just a publicity stunt? It just seemed like there was a lot of attention paid to apologies, and that will probably continue in the future.
Marge, thanks for your call. We're going to go to Joanne from Penobscot. Hi, Joanne. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm so excited. I just came on the end of the last caller's comment because I do want to throw in, I see such a trend of increased kindness and pay it forward and do unto others. I feel like I'm really, I travel back and forth to New York very often, and I'm feeling an increase in that kindness. So I'm so glad she brought that out. And the other thing that I was calling with is I see a trend in this sort of
unusual way of eating, raw food preparation, you know, just more raw vegetables, fruits, seeds, and grains, and combining them in unique ways. And it's a vegan sort of way of eating, and it's even more extreme because it's raw and you're not cooking the food. But I'm seeing a lot more interest in that, and classes coming up. And
interesting. Thanks so much, Joanne. And it seems as though the raw food movement's been around for a while. But Jessica, is this what happens? Things kind of maybe bubble down under the surface a little bit, and all of a sudden they have their year?
They certainly do, and they take different forms. This year, we had a number of poke places open up in D.C., and one even in my hometown of Akron, Ohio, there's a poke place now. And so that's obviously raw fish over some rice with some other raw ingredients mixed in, so that, you know, it's sort of taking on that trend into a different form.
Joanne, thanks for your call. I think we have time for another call. We'll go to Susan calling from Wells. Hi, Susan. Go ahead.
Yes, hi, Jennifer. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to add a little additional insight into the milkweed and the monarch connection. I've grown some common milkweed in my front yard, just a little patch I control with my lawnmower, for a bunch of years. And not only do I get the monarchs, but I get a wide variety of pollinators and even hummingbirds. One hummingbird comes reliably about 7 o'clock every morning. So it's a great way to get a native plant supporting native pollinators. And every year is different. It seems every year there's a different caterpillar. There's a milkweed moth caterpillar that came and chewed everything down one year, which was really a lot of fun because they're a colonial organism. And then this past year, of course, I had a lot of chrysalises that I hadn't had before. So it's great, and the milkweed flowers are actually very fragrant. So I'd really encourage folks to either plant the swamp milkweed, which doesn't spread a lot on its own, or the common milkweed, which does tend to spread a bit.
Susan, thanks for your call. There we go, the year of the milkweed. Go ahead.
Something about being -5 degrees in Maine makes us want to talk about garden trends.
I love that we're talking about monarchs, too, because one of the other things that we had in was monarchy with the royal wedding.
That's right, the royal wedding and the Amazon. The Romanovs is coming out, the film, or I guess
yes,
series.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, Susan, thanks for your call. Very quickly, Liz on Facebook says, I hope the age of sexual harassment is out for a long, long time.
Here, here.
Forever.
Here, here.
So we have just about, 30 seconds left. What did we not talk about that you guys want to say? Jessica, what else are we going to see next year?
Oh, one of my favorite things that we had on the list this year was the rise of Storm Reid. She's an actress. She's going to be in A Wrinkle in Time, and she's very young, but very beautiful and very talented. So I guarantee you by the end of next year, everyone will know who Storm Reid is.
Okay. Brian, any thoughts?
I think more and more people are going to wake up to what a cesspool Facebook is in 2018 and peel off to their other social media environments or maybe drop it altogether.
Shannon, you get the last word.
I would like to see the end of references to like fad diets, and I know that's not a 2017 specific thing, but that, you know, women or men as well being focused on like losing a certain amount of weight or like fitting in a certain pant size, and instead like focusing on how they feel in their bodies and, you know, feeling good and functional and being able to move well into their late age.
Well, here's to 2018. Thank you all for being here. Jessica Contrera, reporter for the Washington Post and author of the Post's annual What's In and What's Out column. Shannon Bryan, founder of FitMaine.com, and Brian Kevin, managing editor of Down East Magazine. Sandra Harris ran the board today. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.